Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're all doing well. So the plan for today is that we're going to continue where we left off last time, where we were figuring out how to construct the matrices for the Ising Hamiltonian with an arbitrary number of sites. So that's going to take up still the majority of today's class. And then we'll start looking at things like actually calculating for this model with different numbers of sites, the eigenvalues and eigenvectors, some expectation values, and we'll see how much we have time for. So I don't know exactly how far we'll get, but we'll get as far as we can, and hopefully it will be exciting. And then we're going to finish up on Friday with the Ising model using exact factorization, and I'll just give you some brief demo of some more sophisticated methods, which we won't have time to go into much depth for. So let me remind you then what we were doing at the end of last time. So I'll get my notes out. So we were looking at the Ising model, as I said. With some arbitrary number of sites, n. So we're going to continue doing that today. And just to remind you what we're doing, this looked like this, where each of these terms really means like this large tensor product. You have identity on the first site, identity on site zero, identity on site one, and you keep going up until you get to site I, where you have this sigma z, and then on site I plus one, you have sigma z, and then we have more identity matrices. Right, and you can do the same thing with the X term. So that's what we were saying last time. And then to construct this matrix, we're going to separately construct what I'll call the ZZ term, that is this sum on I, sigma IZ, sigma I plus 1Z, and the X term. That's the sum on I of sigma ix. And the reason why we construct these separately is because we don't want to have to redo it for every g. Like we're going to be varying this parameter g, and constructing these matrices is actually going to take quite a lot of computing time. So if we have to do it starting from scratch every time we change g, that would be pretty bad. So we're constructing first the z term and then the x term. So again, last time I showed you how to find the zz term with what I called method one, which was repeated Kronecker product. We wrote out some term that was like, you know, whatever, identity, tensor sigma z, tensor sigma z, for example, with n equals three. And we wrote this out as first identity tensor sigma z, which was equal to like 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1. And then we did this tensor with sigma z. And eventually we got something that looks like 1 minus 1, minus 1, 1, whatever, 1 minus 1, minus 1, 1, or something. Something along these lines. And then we could do the same thing for sigma z, tensor identity, add them, etc. And so this was our first method. We for each term in this sum, we write out a list of all the operators, then we do this repeated Kronecker product across the list, and we get some large matrix. So, and then we add up all the different terms. So this method we talked about last time, and I also showed you in Python the program that does this. Then after that, we moved on to method two, which I called the column by column method. So the goal here was to follow these steps. So step one, we want to say, let's say the first column of the matrix is the operator applied to the first basis state. So this is our normal rule. Let me erase this. This is not really what I want to say. Okay, so then our step one was to convert our basis vector, which looks like a bunch of zeros, and then a one somewhere and a bunch of zeros. And we're going to say this one is in position I. So we're going to convert this basis vector to a list of spins. And we talked about how to do this last time. So this is, again, a review from last time. The answer is that we can create this list, which looks like I divided by 2 to the n minus 1, and you throw away the remainder. That's this double division sign. I divided by 2 to the n minus 2, and we take mod 2. And then we continue on down the list until eventually we just get I mod 2. So this is going to give me a list of zeros and ones. So this could look like, for example, 0, 1, 1, 0, dot, 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 0. And then this 0 means spin up, 1 means spin down, 1 means spin down, 0 means spin up, 0 means spin up, etc. So then what this means is this tensor product. So this is, I believe this is where we got to at the end of the previous lecture. So I'm going to pick up here and sort of be more careful from now on. So this is our first step. Now our second step is to apply our operator that we're interested in to this basis state. So I'm going to give you an example for an operator which doesn't appear in the Ising model. I just want to give you sort of a concrete example so you'll know what I'm talking about. Okay, so let's look at an operator looks like this. O equals identity tensor sigma x tensor sigma z plus sigma x tensor sigma z tensor identity. So this is on three spins. So our basis is going to look like up, 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 down, up, down, up, etc. until eventually get down, down, down. Okay, so there's gonna be 8 total things. So this is, we can try to construct a matrix. So this is gonna be like a 8x8 matrix. And I'm going to look at column number, let's look at column 0 first. So column 0 So this is going to be what I call I equals zero. So this I is, if we go up here, that's this I here. So it means that the one is in position zero. So this made, this vector looks like 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Okay, so my step one is I'm going to do this calculation where I do divisions by different powers of 2 and take mod 2, and the result would be the list 0, 0, 0. So now I can convert this into my real basis state. That's up, tensor, up, tensor, up. So now I want to apply O. So my first term gives me identity tensor sigma x, tensor sigma z acting on up, up, up. And the result is going to be up, down, up, because sigma x flips the center spin. My second term is sigma x tensor sigma z tensor identity. And that's going to act on up, 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 and gives me down, up, up. Okay, so here what I have is a pair of states with coefficients. So this is going to be, in other words, what I can say is that my list 0, 0, 0 has gone to a pair of things. So one is a coefficient that's 1, and a list which is now 0, 1, 0. So that's, this corresponds to this term, because that's up corresponds to 0, down corresponds to 1, up corresponds to 0, so that's 0, 1, 0. And this state is just by itself, so it's multiplied by 1, effectively. And then the other thing we have is a coefficient of 1, and this 1, 0, 0. Okay, so let me now apply this to a different state as well. So I'll give me 1 second to figure out which state I want to apply it to. So let's look at, let's look at column 1 of the matrix. Okay, so if I look at column 1 and do the same sort of steps that I just did, so column 1 is going to be 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. It's going to be O applied to this vector. So that's O applied to following step 1, 0, 0, 1. Or in other words, O applied to the states up, up, down. Okay, so now we're going to do step 2. So in step 2, I apply my operators. So first I apply identity tensor sigma x tensor sigma z on up, up, down. And the result is up from the identity, down, because sigma x flips the spin, and sigma z gives me down, because it's diagonal, but I also get a minus sign, because sigma z acting on down gives me minus 1 times down. And then sigma x tensor sigma z tensor identity acting on up, up, down is going to give me down, up, down. So overall, what I found in step 2 is that my state 0, 0, 1, that was my list of zeros and ones that corresponds to my state, has been mapped to a list of coefficients and states. It looks like this. We have a coefficient of minus 1 with the list 0 for spin up. That's a 0 is for spin up, 1, 1. And a coefficient 1 for the state 1, 0, 1. Okay, so then the last step that we're going to do is to convert back to our vector representation. So to do that, we sort of follow the same steps backwards that we did forwards before. So here, what we did in step one was we took this index I, which indicates which basis vector we're in, and then we did this sort of construction here to get the individual spins. So in this case, we're going to do the opposite. So we start with something that looks, a list that looks like, you know, let's say 0, 1, 0. And now I'm going to multiply this one by 1. I'm going to multiply this one by 2. I'm going to multiply this one by 2 squared. And if there were more, I'd multiply them by higher powers. And so this state would be like 0 times 2 squared plus 1 times 2 plus 0 equals 2. So that would be my index. So in other words, that's going to give me the state 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. So you can, if you think about this for a few minutes, you'll see that, I mean, basically what we're doing is we're representing the I, which is the position of this one, in binary. So this list here is a binary representation of this number, where this is like the ones place, this is the twos place, this is the fours place, etc. Okay, so now let's sort of apply this, apply step three to my example now. So what we had done, let's look at column zero first. So column zero we mapped this one and then a bunch of zeros first to 0, 0, 0, and then we mapped it to our list of coefficients and states. Let me remind myself what that was. So we had 0, 1, 0 and 1, 0, 0. Like this. So now in step three, we're going to map this to 1 times, so 0, 1, 0, we just said, this one, we just said is index 2, that's this vector. So 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And the second one maps to index 4, so that's 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. So these are added, and the result is 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. So that's going to be the first column of the matrix. OK, so we look at the next column of the matrix. That was the other example we did. So here we had the zeros. So 1 was in the second position. So that mapped to 0, 0, 1. And this gave us the combination, let me see, 0, 1, 1. And 1 with 1, 0, 1. So then we can do the conversion again with our step 3 method. And we find minus 1 times the 0, 1, 1. Is 3, so that's like this, plus 1 times this one is 4 plus 1, so that's position 5, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0. So you add these up, and our overall vector is 0, 0, 0, minus 1, 0, 1, 0, 0. So that would be the next column of the matrix. Okay, so is that procedure clear, more or less? So, okay, I'm now going to switch over to my Python program and show you what this looks like in practice. I don't want that one. Okay, so yeah, so we're back in our program. So last time we went through this first one where we did this Kronecker product method. So now we're on method 2, which is the column by column method. So The first piece, this is what I called step one here. The function d2b, which stands for decimal to binary. So I put in this I, which is which basis vector am I looking at? And I put an n, which is the number of spins in my system. And then it just does the calculation I told you about. So this calculates this list of zeros and ones by dividing by different powers of two and then taking mod two. So that's the first conversion. Then this function, b2d, does the opposite. It converts back from the list of zeros and ones to which basis vector we were talking about. Okay, now here's where I do the actual calculation. So I first create this empty matrix of all zeros that I'm going to add to as I do each term. Now I'm going to go column by column, as I said. So I'm going to iterate through all the columns. For each column, I first turn the column index into this list of zeros and ones. So that's this B is going to be the list, is basically which basis state am I looking at in terms of zeros and ones. And then this term, what this does here, this iterates through the sum over I. So when I have my like sum on I of sigma z, that sum on I is this for loop. So this j is the I in the previous version. This I will go over in a minute when I go back to the iPad and the notes. But what I'm doing here is I'm calculating when I apply to this was my list of zeros and ones. And this is a calculation when I apply sigma z on site j and sigma z on site j plus one. What is the effect of doing that on my basis state? And the answer is all I get is an overall sign, which is either plus or minus one. And this is a formula for calculating it, as I'll go over in just a minute. And then this line says that when I apply my sigma z to this list of spins, it doesn't change the list of spins. In other words, sigma z is a diagonal operator. So my new basis state, new b, is the same as the old one. That's why I just copy it. So note that when, so I'm going to ask you in a few minutes to sort of replicate this function, but for the sigma x term. When you do that, it's going to be very important that you do this b.copy. If you try to change b directly, it can lead to errors due to the way that Python stores variables. So you should just, for now, take that for granted that you want to use this b.copy. So then once I have my new basis state and my coefficient, then I figure out which row in my matrix it's, this should go into. So that's going to be like which basis vector do I get after I transform this this basis state back into the to like which index basis vector it is. So I use this opposite b2d function for that. And then eventually I just put this coefficient that I found into the matrix. Okay, so this is how the function works. Now I'm gonna go back to my notes again and show you how we get this particular coefficient. Okay, so let's look at a term that looks like this. Identity tensor, identity dot dot dot, tensor sigma I z, tensor sigma I z plus z I plus one z, tensor identities dot dot dot. And I'm gonna apply this to something that looks like, you know, spin one, or spin on site zero, spin on site one, dot, 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 spin on site I, spin on site I plus one, dot, 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 spin on site N minus one. So each of these spins can be either up or down. So when I do this application, all the identities basically don't do anything. So then what I end up with is S zero, tensor S one, tensor dot, 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 tensor sigma z applied to si, tensor sigma z applied to s I plus one, tensor dot dot dot, tensor s n minus one. So the only non-trivial thing that happens is right there. with the sigma z's. And so you see what I get is plus one for up and minus one for down. And here I get plus one for up and minus one for down. So overall, I get plus one if it's up and up or down and down, and minus one if they're opposites. Okay, but now we are presented up as a zero and down as a one in our list of spins, right? So in this case, either 0, 0 or 1, 1 should give us one, and 0, 1 or 1, 0 should give us minus one. So what I've done, I call these numbers in my program, I call this like B of J, and this is what I call B of J plus one. Then if I do minus one to the power of B of J plus B of J plus one, then you can see that this in fact works, and it gives us exactly what we wanted over here. Because if they're both zero, then it's minus one to the zero, and that gives us one. If they're both one, it gives us minus one squared, which is also one. And if one of them is zero and the other one's one, it gives us minus one to the one, which is minus one. So this is a way of getting the correct coefficient. Okay, so that's how that second method works. And then finally, there's gonna be a third method that we can use to find this ZZ matrix. So the third method, we're going to use some extra knowledge. So use some knowledge specific to the operator. So in particular, we know that this operator sum on I sigma I z, sigma I plus one z is diagonal. So that means the matrix we're going to get is going to look like this. There's some operators on the diagonal, and then off the diagonal, all of the elements are going to be zero. But the diagonal elements are actually just the expectation value in each basis state. So we can use this using the same sort of idea we had before. So let me give you just an example then. If I have like for n equals 3, if I have something like up, up, down, then I can do this. So I just apply. So I can just sort of measure the energy in this by saying, okay, well, with I just want sigma 0 z tensor sigma 1 z tensor identity plus identity tensor sigma 1 z tensor sigma 2 z. And I just want to find the, the expectation value of this. So, of course, So expectation value of a sum of operators is the same as the sum of the expectation value. The same as the sum of the expectation values, right? So in this case, each of these calculations is very easy to do with the one we just did. So this is minus one to the spin zero plus spin one. This is minus one to the spin one plus spin two. And if there are more terms, we can continue like that. So in general, if I have my list of my list of zeros and ones like this, this expectation value of the sum of sigma z is just the sum on I of minus 1 to the spin I plus spin I plus 1. So in this case, I have two steps. Step one is convert column number or column index to a list of spins. So that's going to be the same as in the column by column method. And step two is going to be to calculate this thing and put it on the diagonal. So this is going to be the fastest way to get this ZZ matrix, given that we have this extra knowledge about this operator. So let me then give you a minute to finish writing this down. And this is also a good opportunity to ask questions if you have any.
I have a quick question.
Okay, go ahead.
So I guess in the case for our total Hamiltonian, we could also, depending on the basis we're in, write the other term diagonally as well.
Yes.
So is it faster to like sort of generate both in the diagonal basis and then do a basis transformation?
Generally speaking, that is much slower than calculating than generating the term directly in the basis you want to work in. It's a good question though. Yes. So it will often be the case though that for a given Hamiltonian, there will be some basis that's sort of the nicest basis to work in the sense of like the most parts of the Hamiltonian will be diagonal, and like more terms will be diagonal in one basis than another basis. That kind of thing can happen. So you can get benefits by choosing your basis carefully, but generally speaking, you should construct everything directly in one basis. All right, so maybe I can give a brief comment as to why that is. So in general, so like the example would be that in this case, for Ising model, you would construct things in the sigma x basis to make the other term be diagonal. But we saw that for one spin, the change of basis is given by this. Right, that was our change of basis matrix. So for n spins, it's actually the repeated Kronecker product of this thing. It's like, let me give this a name. I'm gonna call this H. And that matrix is going to be not going to have a single zero in it. So multiplying by that matrix takes a really long time. Okay, so let me go back to the Python again. And I'll show you this third method as well. So now you can see here, this is my ZZ version 3. So we're going to use the knowledge of the operator's diagonal. So in this case, since everything can be zero except for just the diagonal elements, instead of creating a full matrix, I only create a vector which has length 2 to the n instead of a 2 to the n by 2 to the n matrix. Then I iterate through the columns. For each one, I do the step one where I find the list of zeros and ones. And then I calculate this expectation value in the way I told you, where I sum this minus 1 to the spin 1 plus spin I plus spin I plus 1. And then I just put this sum in in this vector. And then finally, I use this np.diag command to turn my vector into a matrix where that vector is on the diagonal. Okay, so that's it. Okay, so now just to confirm that this is all working, I want to sort of test this on a 2x2 system. So this you should be very familiar because, of course, what we constructed by hand for the two-site Ising model. With three sites, you can see it looks like this. With four sites, so now it starts to get quite large already. So you can see why it's important that we're doing this with a program and not by hand. But there's always a danger that small values of n, there can be errors that don't show up, just like they randomly cancel or things like that. So if you really want to check things, it's useful to have multiple ways of calculating something and then compare it for sort of larger sizes that you can't really do easily by hand. So I've done that here. We have three different versions of this calculation. You know, we had the Kronecker product version, we had the column by column version, and we have the version that uses the fact that it's diagonal. So using these three different methods, what I'm doing is I'm subtracting them from each other. So this would be a matrix of all zeros if they're in fact equal. And then this np.linalge.norm will give zero if they're equal. So if they are indeed equal, I should get zero. And if I run this, I do in fact get zero, so they're equal. So that's great. That means we probably didn't. If you do a calculation in three independent ways and they all give the same answer, there's a pretty good chance that you got it correct. Okay, so now at this point, we're going to move actually for basically the rest of today's class into exercises, which will just consist of going through the rest of this notebook in small groups. So before we do that, let me sort of walk you through what I want you to do. So the first thing is we constructed together now the matrix for this ZZ term for any number of spins n. So here we're going to do the same thing. I'm going to have you fill in the code, like there's a space here for that, using both the Kronecker product method and the column by column method for the matrix for the sum of sigma x term that appears in the Ising model. So yeah, here we do it with the Kronecker product. Here I put in the answers for n equals 2 and n equals 3, so you can easily check that your program is working. And then also by the column by column method, again, you can check it. And then you can use this section to compare your results with larger values of n, just to make sure that you're getting the same thing from both methods. One thing I want to note, so yes, I have a hint here, which is that mostly the code is going to be looked the same as what you had before, but there's a few lines seem to change. And the one that you're likely to miss a line is that there's a for loop where like the actual line which contains the for itself needs to get changed a little bit. So that does a hint. I'm not going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Okay, so then once we've done that, we're going to actually go ahead and solve the model. So I've given you code here, which is already complete. There's nothing to fill in, which finds the eigenvalues and eigenvectors and then plots the eigenvalues. But what I want you to do here is to sort of play around with these parameters here. So I have five different parameters that I've created, which you can modify. And I've described here what those parameters actually do. So you should read that and sort of play around and try to see, get a sense of what do the energies look like. And so it's just something to explore. And so once you're satisfied you understand what's going on here, then the next step is to move on to looking at expectation values. So just like we did in the two-site case, when we have the ground state, we can calculate various things. Like in the ground state, we found the expectation value of sigma x on site 0 plus sigma x on site 1. So here we're going to do the same thing. And instead of just two sites, we're going to take the average of the sigma ix on all the different sites in the system. And then the other thing we're going to do is, again, a correlation function where we take two different copies of sigma z. In particular, we're going to take sigma z on the very first site and the very last site. So the reason to do this is to check whether those two sites are doing some are like related to each other. So if the two sites act totally independently, then like, you know, half the time when sigma zero z is up and the then sigma z n minus one could be either up or down, then you're going to get zero because these are not correlated. Whereas if you have what's called long range order, and then both of these things are the same, if you get either one or minus one, it means that there's some strong correlation there, that the two spins, what one spin does has a strong effect on what the other spin does. So that's what we're trying to measure, is this long range order. Okay, so what I've asked you to do here is to first, in this section, create the matrices for these operators that you want to find the expectation values of, for this operator and for the average of sigma x. And then to write how to use those matrices to actually get the expectation value here. And then once you do that and you run this program, you'll get a plot of these expectation values as a function of g, just like we did for the two-site model. And then finally, this part I don't think we're going to get to today. So this is probably going to be on Friday. But we're going to compare different numbers of sites in the system, and we're going to plot the expectation values and the energy levels all together on the same figure and see how they change as I increase n. The reason being that in the end, we're really interested in a long system where n is, you know, thousands and thousands of sites, or, you know, on the order of 10 to the 23 sites. And so we want to ask the question, as I increase n, how does behavior change, and what would the behavior look like if n were to go to infinity? So, but again, I don't think we'll get that today. So I think that's probably going to be for Friday. So your key tasks, like I said, to first construct the X matrix in two different ways, and then to explore the eigenvalues, and then to do this expectation value calculation. So that's what we're going to be doing for the rest of today's class. So with that, I'm happy right now to answer questions while I am setting up these breakout rooms, and then I'll send you off into your small groups. All right, it looks like more or less everyone is back here now in the main room. So it seems like based on going around checking with people, basically everyone finished writing the matrices for the X operator and was starting to look at the eigenvalues and what those, like, sort of explore the different system sizes and so forth. And a few of you were moving on to the calculation of expectation values. So that's good. That's right where I thought we'd get to for today. So I think the plan for next time is we're going to, so the focus today was really on how do you write the programs to generate these matrices, to generate the Hamiltonian and solve the system. And then next time we're going to be focusing more on the actual physics of it. So we're going to be calculating expectation values in the ground states as a function of the system size, the number of sites n. And we're going to try to look at some trends and identify what's called the quantum phase transition in the model, based on looking at expectation values and also the gaps between the lowest energy eigenstate, the lowest energy eigenvalue, and the second and third eigenvalues. So that's sort of going to be the main story on Friday, is finishing looking at the model and trying to get these, extract these physical properties from it. And then I'm also going to spend just a little bit of time on Friday to show you what you can do with some more sophisticated numerical methods. But unfortunately, I hope I'd have time to sort of tell you about how those actually work. Obviously, that's not going to be the case with a small fraction of one lecture, but I will demonstrate to you that there are things that are more efficient than this exact optimization, which can let you study systems not up to 10 sites as we're doing here, but up to like 100 sites or even more. So that's what's in store for Friday. And so I'll see you for that in a couple of days. So that's it for today. I will stick around for a few minutes to answer questions if you have any, but otherwise I'll see you on Friday.